a missile body. Electronic systems.
Everyone, welcome to the December 28th edition of the In the Now show. Once again, your host Slipmode in the house, along with his other cronies,
VR
and Bob.
All right.
Well, where's Neil, Bob?
All right.
Okay. well, we decided to do something a little interesting on this show, other than the amount of stories and information we're trying to bring to you on a bi-monthly or bi-weekly basis. We have VR and Slipmode drinking a Corona.
Oh, yeah.
During the show.
Yeah, I think it's a well-deserved little
holiday treat.
Yes.
And for everyone listening out there, happy holidays, Merry Christmas. And for people that have a problem with hearing the word Merry Christmas and choose to use the word holidays, it actually means holy day. So you're still screwed.
And happy Hanukkah and Kwanzaa.
Yeah, Kwanzaa, the real African holiday.
That's right. A celebration of community.
All right. Well, here's our most deepest scientific story. Deepest one. And then after that, it's just a bunch of fluff.
And it's just going to go up from there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, officials from several countries meeting in Washington were divided on whether to build the international reactor in France or Japan. I don't even know why they picked France. Nuclear fusion holds out the promise of, well, this reactor is a nuclear fusion reactor, which promises virtually limitless pollution-free energy. Experts say the country hosting the International Thermonuclear Experimental Reactor, ITER, for people that don't like saying long words, project will be gain a potential lucrative head start in expertise and technology. So, sounds like they're trying to move forward with the idea. I don't know how they're going to hold all that fusion.
Yeah, but also the drawback of, you know, the con of having all that, the possibility of having all that expertise and new technology is, you might just actually incinerate your entire country and the countries neighboring you.
Entire planet?
Yeah, that's a possibility.
Yeah. Hopefully they're, I mean, obviously you don't think they do that because then they can't spend all the money they're going to make from trying to build this stupid thing. Well, I don't want to say stupid thing. Could be really cool.
Well, that's probably why they could be wanting France to have it.
Because they feel sorry for him right now?
Yeah.
It's a Trojan horse.
Because
without
they're not going to get any things over, any new contract work over in Iraq. Hey, you know what? Save the drinks, too, for some, maybe we'll have a cheer later or something like that. A big, you know.
Right on.
What is that called? It's a
toast.
A toast. A cheer.
Which actually comes from putting bread into the beer glass.
Really?
Yeah.
Toasty bread?
Mm-hmm.
Sweet.
Put it in there.
All right.
Because actually beer was really a part of, like, it's actually like how we consider like a square meal or whatnot. It was actually like a corner of that.
I thought beer was invented to get away from women.
No.
Well, it also is used to charge to get women too.
Yeah, exactly. So
I think, but it's one of those things like you know, you see a lot of people that are like, you know, pissed off at their wives or whatever. For some reason, the garage is man's best friend, right?
Yeah.
And we buy some weird hunk of crap, you know, an old car or something like that, and then we fix it, make it beautiful, you know, and don't give so much money to our children's college funds.
Which we were actually intending to, for our significant other or our wife to be that project car to make it beautiful. But yeah. They just turned out to be...
Yeah. But then you pass it off to your son or whatever. So
yeah.
Here you go, bud. So I think somebody did that, and they found beer, you know, because they didn't have cars back then to buy in garages, I think. So
yeah.
They're like, hey, let's see if we see what we can do with all this wheat and...
yeah, I think it was...
Grain, I mean. Yeah.
Could have been a product of actually bread creation, too.
So that's our illegitimate history of beer.
Beer used to be really, really, really... like, overwhelmingly sickly sweet until the occupation of India by Britain.
That's why we bring VR to the show, because he's filled with lots of interesting stuff. He learned it in a book, How to Get Intelligent Women, he's using it on the show, so at least it paid off in other ways because he doesn't have any good women. But
yeah. Sadly speaking.
Okay, well, back to the show of technology and in the now and beer.
But see, that is actually technology, because the reason why beer was sickly sweet back then, and it's not now, is because they put, you know, that the cargo from going from Britain all the way down around Africa to India. In that time, the really sweet beer would go bad.
You have the Discovery Channel, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But this wasn't on the Discovery Channel. This is actually real
this
research.
This is on the History Channel.
No, yeah. This is real research here. And somebody figured out that if you put
He
hops,
doesn't have a garage. He lives in an apartment.
Yeah. No, sure. You put hops in beer, it keeps it fresher longer.
No way.
Yeah.
What about Yellow Dye number 5?
That has no...
Okay,
you know,
no bearing on preservatives. Okay,
So they would load it up with hops. And actually, they would load it up so much, it would be green. Yeah.
As you've noticed for the show, we don't
really
have very many
really
stories, so we're trying to fill it up with lots and lots of fluff. No,
and
no.
It actually became really bitter.
Actually, we have plenty of information. All right.
But that was my little soliloquy on beer.
Well, that was very hegemonic.
I think. Informative.
And agreeing with your own hegemony.
Oh, I think.
I need a new word of the day calendar.
Titillating. Okay. All right. Well, most people know out there that you can buy a car equipped with an OnStar GPS system. The OnStar GPS system gives you directions, gives you an onboard LCD display, depending on which model you get, to tell you about interesting things that are around you, and also helps you unlock your doors and find your car if it's stolen. Well... there's lots of people that are finding new ways to modify their OnStar system to work with their own existing equipment and then ditching the OnStar service fees, which are around $400 a year. Ray Kowal, the 57-year-old retired engineer, had pried the OnStar unit from behind the glove compartment and customized it to work with his laptop and commercially available mapping software. His wife read him directions right off the laptop and sat between them. The modified unit was no longer connected to the OnStar network, over which representatives could have provided the same service for a fee. Other road warriors are quickly discovering that as websites and message boards spring up with step-by-step instructions on removing and personalizing the OnStar's navigational and communications components. So there's some OnStar hacking for you. Bruce Randolph, OnStar Chief Technology Officer, pointed out that owners who tamper with the system risk voiding the warranty on the OnStar unit. No. And more critically, the warranty of the entire car. Yet he acknowledges the temptation. Okay, come on. The warranty of the entire car?
Oh, yeah.
You're not going to warranty my engine because my freaking OnStar has been, removed of paying OnStar for their services and I bought my own equipment to run it? Give me a break.
Well, that's kind of like the whole, that they're so integrated into a complete system that tampering with one will foul the other.
There are cars that are designed like that. And if it is a car that's designed like that to some degree where they integrate stuff, like some cars really have a problem putting in, aftermarket stereos.
Yeah.
Like the high-end ones where they have this custom stereo. They don't give you the same,
faceplate,
interface to put it in there. Dimitri's car, his stereo actually runs through the system using fiber optics to communicate to other components in the car.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you'd have to, if you want an aftermarket stereo, you would have to get one that would be able to communicate with fiber optics.
Something like that. It's just the way it hooked. They couldn't, for that model, they just could not put a third, an aftermarket stereo in.
So he was stuck with the stock stereo on his car?
Yeah.
Poor guy.
Yeah.
But at least he's got the fiber optics, which he'll never see and nobody will ever know, and he probably won't get laid because he has it.
Yeah.
So really, fiber optics, who cares? All right.
The fiber optics is the wave of the future.
Actually, just wireless is.
Well,
because then it doesn't matter what.
Depending on its medium, it's needed.
Yeah.
I'd rather have fiber go over the ocean than the whole United States wirelessly transmitting, all these connections to other countries. That'd be really crappy.
Well, then you could just sit
on it. Get a bunch of, guys with beards and towels on their heads in the middle of the ocean with, satellites trying to figure out what's going across the traffic. But,
yeah,
I was talking about terrorists, not Arabic
war
people,
sailing,
because I don't have any problems with Arabic people or anything like that. Talking about terrorists, stuff like that. Misuse of technology. Okay. All right. Well, this is kind of a weird story. I don't really understand it completely. Maybe you guys will be able to help me out. Microsoft's trying to be the savior of spam. I mean, saving you from it, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what they want to do. The basic idea is that we are trying to shift the equation to make it possible and necessary for a sender to pay for email, explained Todd Wauber of the Microsoft Research Group. The payment is not made of currency of money, but in the memory and the computing power required to work out cryptographic puzzles. For any piece of email I send, it will take a small amount of computing power of about 10 to 20 seconds. If you don't know how, I will have to prove it to you, and I will send you a little bit of time and resources to send you that email. When you see that proof, you treat the message with more priority. Once senders have proved that they have solved the required puzzle, they can be added to the safe list of senders. After that, it means that the spammer's machine is slowed down, but legitimate emailers do not notice any delays. Mr. Wauber and his group calculated that if there are 80,000 seconds in a day of computational price of a 10-second levy, would mean spammers would only be able to send about 8,000 messages per day at most. Spammers are sending tens of millions of emails, so if they had to do that with all the messages, they would have to invest heavily in machines. As a result of this extra investment, spamming would become less profitable, because costs would skyrocket in order for them to send any emails. All this clever puzzling done is without the recipient of the email being affected. It sounds like a bunch of hoopla.
It sounds like they're trying to.
So they have to use my computer for me to send email now?
I don't know.
I think what it's doing is that the program to make emailers to send the email is now going to, also charge when you click send, that then it poses a query to your CPU, which makes it think for 10 to 20 seconds.
Yeah, with this takes up some memory,
and so it slows down the rate in which you can send email. Which that's not the the end that you really need to consider.
Yeah,
because
they're just what you're sending it through. Other things may not have that crap.
Well, see, they can either come up with their own email system, which doesn't do that. You know, whatever. That it's not a viable deterrent. It's not. You know,
what happened to just, like, not letting them send, period? I don't understand. If you know who they are, I mean, how do you, like, know which is to process as normal on the safe list? And then shouldn't the safe list just be the safe list and then no one else can send? I mean, what the heck does that... I don't know. The
I
article
think they're
maybe
talking about on the sender side. If you send any email, really, it's going to take, you know, 10 to 20 seconds for your computer to process the sent email.
But what it doesn't make sense is, how do you know who to screw over to make it take forever to send and who not to?
No,
they're
not.
Each email you send, like if you address an email to like 20,000 people, it's not going to get sent because it's going to be very costly for them to send it because it poses use on your hardware.
No, how I understood that was that every time you send an email, every time you actually send an email, it would... You know, like load your computer
mm-hmm.
with an extra function rather than just sending the email.
Yes.
That would take your computer 10 to 20 seconds
mm-hmm.
before you could send another email.
Mm-hmm.
So being a spammer, you would have to have, let's say if you could send an email every second.
You could just use
You would have to use 10 times the machines to send the same amount of emails.
Actually, so with this, it sounds like if you don't use Microsoft, you can't send emails anymore.
Well, no. I mean, it doesn't make sense at all.
But that could be a drawback there.
Well, hold on, VR. Hold on, let me say something.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense at all. I mean, who's doing the screwing over? You know what I mean? Is it the software? Then just use a different piece of stupid software. I don't really get it.
Well, it would be a new email standard, actually.
Yeah.
There have been a few new email standards proposed. One is signed email. All email will have to be signed, and if it's not signed, you can reject it based on that because it's obviously not something that you'll want because it's most likely spam. That's one of the new standards.
I don't know. I see a way of getting around all that stuff.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty easy. So it's really an effective idea.
Yeah, it's just something to make the public more happier, and actually it just sells more products to upgrade to that anyways.
Yeah,
we're looking out for you. Filter on my box.
Yeah, there's things out there. They work.
Security is not a right. That's all I have to say about that.
Well, in a way it is, because you have a right to own a weapon.
Yeah, but that's...
Security.
That's a right. That's responsibility.
And responsibility.
Yeah.
All right, well...
It's a responsibility that you can utilize in order to secure your... You know, be more secure.
So, yeah. Well, we'll keep up to date with the things that go on with email standards and other things like that. I don't know. It's a big thing in the world of technology for the last year or so. Okay, well, Kevin Mitnick has come out with a book that everyone has seen, The Art of Deception, but he's also looking for making a new book and including other people to help write that book. Kevin Mitnick has sent out a letter to everyone saying, publisher John Wiley and Sons has just commissioned me to co-author my second book, telling the untold stories of computer hacking and social engineering into the most resilient organizations on the planet, corporations and government and military installations. I'm putting out a call to all current and former hackers to tell me about their sexiest hack. I'm not looking for those who simply downloaded and used pre-packaged exploits, but hackers who have shown innovation and ingenuity to compromise their targets. The most desirable stories will be those that involve a combination of technical, physical, and or social engineering aspects. The more devious and cunning, the better.
Oh, yeah.
There will be a $500 prize awarded to the person who comes forward with the most provocative story. $500. Now, here's the thing. I got a few things to say about that. Wow, neat. Read that book, right? Another War Games book. But who the hell is going to put their ass on the line telling their illegal stories?
For $500.
For $500.
I won't even pay the legal fees, which will be the ramifications of that.
You know, because if any... I don't know. Obviously, they probably have thought to some degree how they're going to handle that. But, you know, who the heck... I don't know. And that's my first take on it. My second take is it kind of sounds like a book of, like, magicians revealing their magic tricks.
Or, you know, a barroom of hackers, you know, blowing hot air. a boasting.
Yeah.
And so you're really going to have to go, you know, what is really true and what's full of it.
Yeah. Oh, the book is going to be called The Art of Intrusion.
What an original title.
Yeah. But, yeah. But that's, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, the book's probably going to be fun to read. But, I don't know. People are probably going to think for their first second, I don't know if I should give that information out. Well, I can tell my friends I'm in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can see that because, you know, Jerry Springer only pays $600 for to go up on national TV and air all your dirty laundry.
I wonder how many people will be making stuff up just to get in the book.
Yeah, see, that's the other thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, obviously, you know, I'm sure Kevin or whatever, I'm sure they thought about all that stuff. He's probably going to have to pore over it and see if it's true or not, if it makes plausible sense, you know.
And they're not going to be able to, you know, essentially collaborate it because they're wanting all these, you know, military installations, which are going to deny everything.
Yeah.
You know,
Here's how I got into the government. You know what I mean? Like,
and they're going to be like, no, that didn't happen.
Or they're going to say, you can't publish that information.
Yeah.
Something like that.
You know? It's like, what if we just change the dots to something else? Make them dot Bob or whatever, you know? I broke in a dot Bob. And then, you know, I don't know. But it's probably be an interesting book to read. All right. Well, we talked about this last show, and it's just more and more, you know, community response and communication and chatter about this kind of thing that's going on. Companies that are taking from open source and not giving back, and they're reaping the benefits, and they're not giving back. And giving back too is also a lot of the article here is talking about how giving back too is actually cheaper than developing it yourself. And the amount that you give back, if companies were doing that, it would really help make the software even better. So.
But see, that's the tragedy of the commons, which that's what open source really is it's this common area of knowledge and process, which anybody can take from, but they don't have to give back. Yep. And so in a capitalistic society, they're not, because they don't have to.
Yeah, well, that's abuse. You know, that's not good. Every few weeks in industry trade mags such as eWeek, InfoWorld, and the like, you can see a case study about a company that uses open source software in one form or another. They usually are deliriously happy about the quality of the software, the time freed up, and the money saved. There are always gripes, usually, centered around the installation or the lack of a feature, but they tend to be minor. The end result is that these studies are always the same, and a grinning person telling us and how they won with the open source software. Almost all these companies said that they have cut their headcount or have been able to move the people from stupid work to actually moving the company forward. There's one problem. They're all taking and very few are giving anything back. So the article basically, you know, is talking about how that's a problem for the community, how it's beneficial if they just gave a little bit back. For what they paid for, they're still going to make a better profit than they did before because they didn't do the work for the base or whatever they, you know, whatever piece that they grabbed. And then you know, there's a lot of things like firewalls out there. There's you know, routers that are implementing Linux and little security devices and you know, all those little plug and play devices are now more and more have Linux thrown on there because it's already developed, and of course a lot of stuff are embedded devices, and it's you know, totally plausible. I mean, why go out there and it's just like in the GNU Linux community, why go out there and recode it if it's already there, and then you can just modify it, unless it's horribly broken. And
well, see, that's the thing. Now, if let's say these companies are actually utilizing less heads, so they have to get rid of like five people, why don't they just keep one and go, guess what, you're our new open source programmer.
Yeah, but they have to give those changes back.
Yeah,
to the community.
Exactly.
I mean,
unless you go develop stuff and give it back to the community.
Yeah, but then I don't know. It's a whole thing. I mean, giving back to the community, though, it's okay, I guess, if they're going to write proprietary drivers. But if they're going to make changes to the actual Linux, you know, GNU Linux code itself, they should be giving that back. But you know, some people may say, "Well, I don't want to give it back because then my competitor can take it." And
well, then you've already done it. You've already got the head start, and you know, you've already got the advantage.
Yeah. So I foresee things like that happening and continuing to happen. But, hey, it doesn't matter. I mean, open source is going to continue to grow regardless of who's abusing it. It's just, you know, it's its own entity.
Well, it's an intrinsic property of how, you know, how it's set up and how it deals with its problems.
Right. Well, this is another article about Linux, but it kind of says looking back on Linux security in 2003, and this somewhat goes along with the Windows and stuff too. Saying you know, patching was a huge thing, obviously, for this year. It was a big thing in 2000 or 2002 as well. And of course, it was the whole arguments of my OS is more secure than yours. So, you know, a lot of Linux security going back and forth, saying that we're doing better than any competitors out there. You know, talking really about Microsoft. And then there was some high-profile breaches, like the Debian project and Gentoo Linux. The Gentoo one was noticed hours, not very many hours. I think it was like 4 hours after the breach happened. And they cleared that up ASAP. The Debian project, I think it was a month or two or a few months, they did clear it up, and a good thing happened because of it. They did discover a buffer overflow in the Linux kernel, and that was previously unpublished, and they figured out what it was, and now it's published. So that kind of thing has been you know, secured if you patch your own machine. So, I mean, good things have come from it, and it was done quickly, professionally, and they learned a lot from it. So, you know, I guess I think one time I mentioned this a long time ago on the show, it's actually cool. Don't feel bad if your box gets broken into. You know what I mean? If you've done everything you can to secure it. But it's cool because after that happens, then you get to learn from, you know, what happened and try to figure it out. And doing forensics is a huge thing. I mean, learning how to secure it is one thing, and forensics is a whole other arena. So doing that is not a bad thing. It's all positive for everyone's learning and growing. Because
that just means that there's something that you didn't know.
Yeah.
And now you get to figure out what it was. And so then you'll know it.
And then, let's see, one other thing looking back on Linux security is the debate about viruses. Basically, that there was very small number of, I don't even remember one. I'm sure there is one, at least. But
I've never heard of one.
No, yeah, I've never heard of one, but, well, what the heck? There was one, I remember there being some sort of worm that affected Linux machines. I think there was one worm, but I forget. It was a while ago. But talking about that, so
I remember the SQL Slammer affected a lot of people's logs on their Linux boxes.
Well, yeah. Yeah, the logs. I had that a lot. And the, what's it, the SQL Slammer and the one before that. What the heck was that one? Code Red. Code Red 2. But, yeah, and then the whole thing is that I think the reason that article was written is because Linux security is now becoming more of a limelight issue because of the problems in Windows. And it kind of ties into this next bit of information that we're going to talk about, which is new Microsoft unit will focus on the core of Windows, and you'll see later how they're studying Linux extensively so they can steal all their good ideas like they do from all the other companies. They can't buy them out because it's free, so let's just try to steal what we can in the process. I guess it's a good move, but hey, screw them. They weren't the ones that started it, so I'll go with the guys that that did it in the first place. All right. Well, the Windows Cooperating System Division, the COSD. I'm part of the COSD crew. I don't know about you guys. within the company's platform group, will be responsible for the core OS platform, including development, program management, and testing. To a certain extent, Microsoft's decision to form a devised division focused on the OS core was driven by its main rival, Linux. Well, I mean, of course, Linux is no threat to them, right? Remember all this stuff that Bill Gates and Larry Ballmer, or whatever his name is,
Steve Ballmer
was saying that, you know, we don't have a problem with Linux. You know, Windows is just fine, but our core development team, it's mainly driven because of, well, I don't know, Linux. Rob Enderle, something like that. President Hennis at the Enderly Group of consulting firms specialized on emergency technologies in San Jose, California. They have been studying Linux extensively. It's actually GNU Linux. I hate when people just say Linux unless they're talking about the kernel. Part of their study has been on how Linux has been able to maintain a high level of consistency in the kernel while groups around it maintain maximum flexibility, which means you can do a lot with the Linux kernel, and it's still pretty secure. By closely controlling the OS core, Microsoft will be able to better ensure that the Longhorn will arrive on time and meet its quality and security objectives.
The Longhorn.
That Longhorn.
That Longhorn.
Will arrive on time. What a stupid name. Okay. So, basically, they're trying to build it. They're trying to take the best bits of Linux and include Windows DRM and their security crap and their, you know, closed source, you know, platform devices and crap to keep you into their system. So they're going to steal from, you know, making it a little bit better, stealing from other people as usual, trying to advance themselves, make a little bit more money, and spread misinformation about people out there that really did it right from the beginning. All right, kind of sounds like SCO. Wait, that's right. Microsoft pays SCO. Never mind. Okay. Well, I don't have very much information on this, but I read something about this. It's a new file-sharing utility. It's called Mute. And basically, it sounds like a mission statement. It's a new peer-to-peer technology or peer-to-peer network that provides easy search and download functionality while also protecting your privacy. And then some of the things they say in here is kind of like an FAQ. Mute protects your privacy by avoiding direct connections with your sharing partners in the network. Most other file-sharing programs use direct connections to download or upload, making your identity available to spies from the RIAA and other unscrupulous organizations. Let's see. Mute is based on research, and the experiments show that it works quite well. Well, of course you're going to say it works well. Hopefully it does. Mute's anti-ant-inspired routing is lightweight, robust, and adaptive. Results from experiments in real Mute networks show that the collective behavior of Mute nodes quickly finds the shortest and fastest routing path between two nodes on the network. Sounds like IGRP and RIP, which are routing protocols. The RIAA has just started bullying internet users, but they've been bullying musicians for decades. By refusing to pay for a major label RIAA music, we can usher in a more fair music business and keep the internet free, as in freedom.
Right on.
Yep.
That sounds like a beautiful thing.
So let's toast to that.
All right.
And let's see. Here we go. Okay, another drink of the, we're drinking Corona. I'm not a big beer drinker, but we had some here from the holiday festivities and decided that...
And neglect of beer is just another form of alcohol abuse.
You're abusing alcohol by not drinking it.
Exactly. It's like, you know... You deny a person some attention, you deny a beer attention, you know, it's the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just abuse.
Okay, this is another article. There's a lot of things going on where it seems like other companies are suing other companies because our technology was used and patented first before you, or your stuff looks like ours. It sounds like a great way to make money, actually. Even if it is in the true sense that somebody stole your technology or whatever and you had it patented first. But it's really about, you know, making money. Why'd you patent it in the first place? Making some money. All right. Video game publisher Mythic Entertainment Monday, which is earlier December, actually mid-December, said that it filed a suit against Microsoft Corp. for trademark infringement over an upcoming Microsoft game that Mythic claims unfairly trades on its name. Mythic Dark Ages of Camelot also employs Norse images and mythology, and Mythic argued in its suit that the imagery in Mythica is too much like its own game. The suit asks for damages as well as an injunction against Microsoft and other penalties. So, hitting Microsoft up for some dough. I know some companies have been doing that.
Yeah, so it sounds like, you know, you could just develop something.
Where'd you get that jacket?
And sit on it and just wait for somebody else like Microsoft to do something. And then you just cash in.
Did you get that on your trip?
No, I got... This is Santa's. This is from Santa.
Oh, okay. That's a very nice job.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, Santa's got a good taste.
Yeah? Yeah. Who is Santa, mom or what?
Me.
Oh.
All right. So the compliment was taken doubly well.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Right. Okay, well, and... Okay, because we come with such a barrage of subjects, basically. It's all these things going on in the technology world. Not so much I would consider in the scientific world, even though there is science technology, but this is more, you know what I mean, technology, OSs, computing, stuff like that. So we've been talking about Linux security, and we talked about how Microsoft's interested in Linux, and this other article here is about Microsoft asking Linux users, how can we get your business? I think, I don't know. It's like asking black people, is it okay if we're still racist to you? You know what I mean? Like, how can we be racist to you still and let you be okay with that? You know, how can you ask Linux users, how can we get your business? You're like, well, how about you open source your stuff? Why don't you accept open standards? Why don't you stop, like, bullying your competition where, like, you force your icons over other people's icons or stuff like that? Or in the past, deliberately sabotage programs that get installed in your computer. You know, that's...
Or just, you know, why don't you make your program more functional for me?
Yeah.
Well, why don't you let me change it in order so it works most efficiently for what I do?
Yeah, or say, like, you know, if I'm going to pay $300 for your operating system, at least make it so I don't have to, like, buy, like, spyware, virusware, update it all the time, pay somebody to fix it when it's down because I don't know how to fix it myself, you know.
Yeah, so it just becomes a big money pit.
Yeah, it's... Okay, so Microsoft has started distributing two online surveys to Linux users groups and Linux users in general. One asking primarily about home computer use, the other about business use. They apparently don't plan to release the results of their surveys, so we and other people in the open source community are asking you to look at them and post your answers and comments here and on other appropriate websites where I'm in open, where it's an open style and everyone can see the results. Here is where? Where is here? Oh, on OSDN. The Open Source Developer Network. I believe that's what it is. There it is. Okay. And this is an email from Microsoft here saying, I'm a program manager at Microsoft doing some research on why our product sucks and how to make it better compared to Linux. No. research around how we can improve our operating systems. My goal is
and
to
you
help
actually
us
thought that that's what it said.
For a second.
My goal is to help us identify capabilities, improvements, and features that Microsoft will be focusing on to help our customers over the next 5 years. And so, the whole philosophy... Well, let me finish. I am particularly interested in hearing from Linux users and get their input about what they feel should be the priorities. In particular, I would like to better understand what is it that makes Linux and open source solutions so useful to you? Gosh.
The fact that it doesn't cost $300 and it does what we want?
Yeah. Me and Bob know that if you pay $300 anyways for Linux, if you put Linux and Windows side by side and you're paying the same price, it's still more of a benefit. Depends on what you want to use it for. You know, if you really need it for Microsoft Office, you know, and you don't want to use something different, maybe you have a problem or, you know, stuff that's only on the Windows platform, then other than that, you know, there's plenty of benefits, and then that it focuses in so many other areas that even Windows, you know, operating system type applications don't even focus in. And on top of it, it's, you know, it's less prone to problematic things that we've talked about, viruses and so on. I mean, there are things out there. I mean, it affects everybody in the computing world that can affect your system. It's just that a better design system is less affected. So, you know, on top of that, it's the whole, it's really a benefit to programmers and people that are hobbyists that are really trying to push things to their limits. And what happens with all hobbyists is that they create something that's so amazing, so wonderful, that it actually gets accepted in the mainstream. So that's how most of the, that's how a lot of really good inventions came about in the United States and all over the world, because a hobbyist just tinkered around and found it on his own. So it's as we said before, it's every...
It really originated from passion. You know, this person who was a hobbyist really enjoyed doing what it was. And so they made it, you know, I said for quite a while that one person with passion is worth 10 people that are paid.
Yeah, you know, and Microsoft had the whole thing like, well, our employees got their butts on the line. Their butts, man. We could fire them.
Oh, they can always get another job.
Yeah, but let's say, us three, me and VR and Bob, we're all programmers, right? Let's just say we are, okay? I'm really not, and VR really isn't. I know Bob does some things. But we all come out with a piece of software that we're working on. Let's say we even have our own separate pieces of software, and then we're trying to show it to other people, say, hey, use this. You know, the minute they look at it, and it's going to be scrutinized by other people, the programmers and stuff like that, and if it's not a good quality product, not as far as something for sale, but just a product, just an entity itself, the piece of software, if it's not of good quality, you know, not saying that they're going to bash you, but they're like, look, this thing's not cool, you know, what about that? It's going to be judged on its merit, you know what I mean? So all these people that are working on software in the open source community, their work is judged on their merit, and people are not going to pick those people to be involved on complex projects or things that really need someone that really knows their stuff.
Well, it also reflects on them personally, because they earn a name, whether it's good, okay, or bad.
Yeah, it's not like I'm some unknown entity at Microsoft that programs this thing. I am, you know, Slip Mode here. This is my email address. This is my website. This is my virtual online entity. This is my work that I produce, and it sucks, you know. And you're like, my name's not going to travel up the open source community's programming ladder, you know. So.
Well, no, so that is like whatever you do in the future, people are going to automatically disregard, because they've already seen it in the past as being less than functional.
Yeah, so it's just, you know, evolution at its finest. This is another, I should have grouped this with the other suing of Microsoft article. This is another article with Real Networks going after Microsoft. Kind of sounds like when they Netscape went after them for Internet Explorer. Real Networks Seattle announced Thursday, which is mid-December, that it sued Microsoft in federal court in San Jose for violations of federal and state antitrust laws. The suit alleges that Microsoft illegally uses monopoly power to restrict competition, limit consumer choice, and attempt to monopolize the growing field of digital media, or audio and video programs played over the Internet. Real Networks is seeking substantial damages that could well exceed $1 billion, in addition to injunctional relief to prevent further illegal conduct by Microsoft, the company said. For example, the Real Networks claims that Microsoft uses monopoly power to restrict how PC makers install competing media players while forcing every user on Microsoft's ubiquitous Windows operating system to take Microsoft's media player, whether they want it or not. So that's...
Yeah, that sounds like the same deal.
Yeah. You know, I mean, this... You know, some of those things... You know, you own your own company, you'd rather have them use your thing. You know what I mean?
Oh, of course.
So, I mean, to some degree, it's hard for me to say that that's such a bad thing. But when you got a company that does it all the time, maybe it's a problem. And then when you got, I don't know, it's...
Well, and also they're virtually, you know, monopoly, and so...
Yeah.
And their version is inferior, and they don't give the customer choice.
Yeah.
That's the thing. That's really what it's about, is they do not give the customer choice.
Exactly.
And then, well, on top of it, too, is that, you know, if you're going to have monopoly, it's just going to be, it's just a level of balancing of things. If they're going to hit a peak, and then after a while, they're going to have to settle down, because... people are going to attack them. You know what I mean? That's just a normal function of society. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
but if we really, really want it to be functional, we just need to let Microsoft take over, engulf absolutely everything. So everything that we use, do, consume, make, throw out, all go through one company's hands. Then we, the people, will be able to rise up, overthrow it, and reclaim everything.
See, it isn't now. We're promoting rioting here.
No. This can be completely peaceful.
No, I know.
Absolutely
just,
can be.
I'm just making a joke here.
And so, but what that does is allows absolutely everything that we do to have a common platform. The whole infrastructure will be under one flag of, you know, of corporations, of like the whole energy system, the whole trucking system, food, everything would be a complete monopoly of us.
Even though it's inferior.
No, it wouldn't be inferior, because it would become open source at that time.
Well, it's almost like communism done right.
No, it's like, yeah, it kind of is. And then you take it back and you make it free and social.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what.
But then every time you get the blue screen of death, the entire world would shut down until you could reboot it.
But see, at the same time, is you could... yeah, once you shut it down, you reinstall something like, you know, Linux, and you go, there you go. Completely open source.
I don't think it'd be as simple as all that, but that's it's a good idea.
Well, yeah, it'll take, you know, 200 to 500 years to maybe come about.
Yeah.
And we'd have to let Microsoft take everything over first.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
and that's pretty hard to do. I would have a hard time doing it as well. But
me too.
But it'll eventually get there.
Eventually.
Why? Because we're on the defensive, and the defensive position always loses.
You know what I really think of open source and stuff like that is, and that kind of thinking, actually, all it is that capitalism got so big, especially back in the 50s with all the industry and the factories and stuff like that. Now the digital age, it's so much easier to be even do more mass producing and stuff like that. So we're in a lot of capitalism going on. So, you know, after a while, to balance all things, you know, everything has some sort of balance that comes to bear. And that I think that this is some sort of, you know, balance. The consumers are willing to pay money now, it seems like. So we like paying money, so people are lowering prices, and you're getting a lot. You know, a lot more features than you could have gotten 20 years ago in your home, pretty cheap.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Comparing all the crap you get. So, I mean, there's, you know, it's bouncing out. So the whole point is you want everyone happy. Everyone's making money and everyone's spending money, and that's the way it's really supposed to be. And open source is going to come in, and it's making people happy. You know?
That's right.
People are spending money in other areas. And
which actually allows other areas to grow because they're not all throwing all their money at, you know, and technology.
Yeah, it's a pretty good thing. Okay, moving along here. This is something, I read this article, and it just so reminded me of somebody I know. There's a new trend that is emerging that is keeping the source code in an escrow account for a lease to the buyer under certain circumstances. And this trend has hit recently in Indian shores. Customers in India are gradually recognizing the importance of an escrow clause in their agreements with software suppliers, especially that their software has been licensed when the software has been licensed from a small company. Similarly, Indian software suppliers are now comfortable with this concept and readily placing the code with an escrow agent, at least when large international customers demand it. The source code is released under the escrow agent to the concerned customer if certain events occur, such as bankruptcy, change in control, and the supplier of the company, or the material breach of it. Contract regarding the maintenance services that were agreed upon. And what made me think of it is that I had this guy I knew, and it's just when I was working for one of my clients, and I heard him on the phone, and he's talking about to this guy. Basically, was he wants to build an online casino. Okay.
Uh-huh.
So he was talking to these people in India that have the source code. They've already developed an online casino.
Hmm.
They're selling online casinos to people, start their own online casinos.
Right on.
What they do is that they modify the casino to make yours just a little bit different than that guy's.
Ooh.
But you don't get to own the source code. They own the source code.
Yeah.
They will modify to you. I think you get the changes. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But you don't get the originals. I don't, you know, there's just doing stuff like that.
Yeah.
To where they'll
make a base.
Well,
they're keeping them their control and keeping everybody subject so they can get their money.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yep.
And it makes it different so they can, yeah.
I think it really sucks, though. I mean, it's okay for them, but it's hard enough telling somebody how I want something to be done anyways.
Yeah.
Then somebody codes it, then they gotta, like, recode it. You know, that's just the nature of dealing with something that you can't do yourself, so you have somebody else to do it. But what really sucks is that they own the source code, you know what I mean? So if you want somebody to go modify it, they gotta do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
See, that's really the service that you're buying from them.
Yeah.
You're paying for.
And I think the clause meant if they go bankrupt,
right,
you get your code back. Or whatever.
Well, you get the code.
Yeah.
So you don't...
Because it won't go to anybody. So, I mean, why should it just die off? Just give me it, you know, for me.
Right. Because then it can still continue to do business.
So... Right. And then... I mean, lots of news here talking about Linux and Microsoft. I think it's... I mean, it's really hitting a peak, especially with the SCO crap. It's really bringing Linux to light. GNU Linux.
Well, I really enjoyed the commercial that I saw the other day for.
Why don't you tell us about that?
Oh, that was absolutely brilliant. There was a young boy sitting in a white room, kind of like the white room from The Matrix.
Not that commercial. No, I'm just kidding.
You know, which was kind of neat because it was like the white room in The Matrix when they first started to learn Kung Fu. And so this boy is sitting there, and he's having all these people tell them, you know, like, their wisdom from their life and what they know about the world. And he could just sit there and absorb it and understand it. And then all of a sudden, you know, because this is, you know, I was so expecting to say, you know, that this is something about the internet and, you know, society as a whole and you. But it was a Linux commercial backed by IBM.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, it's getting out there. That's a good thing. I'm glad things are shifting, balancing, and new ideas are coming about. But this article says the IT industry is shifting away from Microsoft. We're experiencing a major IT industry shift right now, and if you know where to look, you can actually see it as it happens. This shift is all about Microsoft and open source. Now, here's some of the things. This is why I want to read it. Is that here's some of the things that Microsoft has done to make themselves look more attractive to people that are switching. So obviously it matters to them because they've been trying to tell us it doesn't matter. It's no big deal. They said, does anyone remember OS 2 Warp? How that came and gone? You know, well, it's not OS 2 Warp. Other than in the last 6 months, when was the last time Microsoft lowered prices or gave anything other than a trivial discount on anything? Never. Faced with losing the home office market to OpenOffice, StarOffice, the server side to Linux, databases to MySQL, and the desktop to Linux, in the not-too-distant future, what could it do? Its target price cuts down as those who matter most, the early adopters and other key segments. The first of these cuts was aimed at MySQL, with the developer edition of SQL Server getting the axe to the tune of about 80%. Then it started a slush fund to prevent high-profile companies and organizations from giving Linux that all-important mindshare beachhead. Then it came out with a student and teacher's version of Office. Hint to the readership, if you don't want to pay the $500 for Office, the new version does make you prove you are a student or a teacher, like the last one. Well, none of these tactics are working, and one of the reasons it isn't going as well as Microsoft hopes is its own money-grubbing product activation scheme. Without starting the old debate about the cost of pirated software, it is hard to argue against the fact that even with the numbers of spouts off about piracy, Microsoft still clears about $1 billion a quarter or more. If it wasn't for piracy, Gates Sprout's little 1.0 and 2.0 could afford to be sent to a good school. I guess they don't have names. That's why they call them little 1.0 and 2.0 for his children. Could afford to be sent to a good school. Cry for them. In its wisdom, Microsoft decided to squeeze the users a little, and to its abject horror, it began to realize that people were willing to take the slightly less functionality of OpenOffice for the $500 a machine discount. Who would have guessed that result? See foot, see gun, shoot foot. Who would have guessed? Yeah. So they definitely are doing a few things.
You can get full-blown computers now for less than $500. You have to pay more for freaking Microsoft Office.
You know what? $300 computer. It doesn't come with an operating system, I believe. It was sold, they had them at Best Buy, their e-machine. So a $300 computer was a 1.6 gigahertz Celeron. I think it had like, I don't know if it was 256 or 512 meg RAM, onboard video, onboard, you know, Ethernet, stuff like that. But, hey, $300. I mean, 1.6 gigahertz, even if it's a Celeron, you could do a lot. Don't really count on it for gaming and stuff like that, but internet surfing and just normal, you know, non-computational intensive, use, which is what most home users use their computer for anyways, is mostly non-computational use programs.
AOL was having special offers, too, on computers. If you sign up for a year of AOL service, they'd sell you a computer for, like, $250. It was a pretty decent computer. It was like a $600 computer.
Huh. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It was a holiday promotion, though. I'm pretty sure it's over now.
And then, I don't know if I mentioned this in the last show. Maybe I didn't. Well, it doesn't matter. If you're listening to this show and you haven't heard the last one, or if I didn't say it in the last one, this is it. Okay, well, John Johansson, which was tried in the writing of the DECSS decryption program to be able to play Linux DVDs on GNU Linux systems. Well, they had brought him back on an appeal because he was acquitted of the charges the first time around. And they brought him back on an appeal, and wanted to see if they could get him again, because this was actually a major ruling. The court had ruled that Johansson, now 20, did nothing illegal when it helped crack DVD copy protection codes in 1999, then publicized how he did it. So, they didn't win the second bout either. So, that still stands, that ruling, and he is free to go back to Norway.
Did you hear about what he did with Apple's copy protection on their iTunes?
Yeah. Well, supposedly he didn't remove it. He found a way in the code to out it to a WAV file or something like that.
Yeah, he completely bypassed their copy protection, but he left the resulting file in an unusable format, so he didn't really get in trouble. But there is a way to do it, and if anybody really feels like doing it, they could.
Yeah, it's there. All right. Well, you know, just as we're getting towards the end of the show, just give some news here. I guess we're going to be streaming on cbzone.org. And
Yay.
Doug's taking a while to update his website, but I'm not sure. But we're supposed to be streaming. Like, we do the show every other Sunday. But sometimes I don't get the show up till Monday or Tuesday because I'm working or whatever. And I like to clean it, put an opening and stuff like that. So just to make it for sure, I was like, well, why don't you just stream it Thursday nights? So he said, okay. So I don't know if he's going to be covering this show. I'm going to send him an email this week and see how he's doing on that. But, yeah, I think we're going to be moving out there, and it's our first outlet to really move out with. There's Rant Radio. We haven't got on that because, I don't know, I just maybe I was lazy. I didn't do it. No particular reason. Well,
what time on Thursdays do we know?
In the evenings.
I'm not sure. Okay. Thank you. Yeah. So if you're a diehard fan, you'll just listen on Thursday nights. So.
Yeah. And then, of course, you can always go to slipknot.org, the forums. They've been really slow for, I don't know, a long time. And, so I'm trying to get people to communicate there and talk about the show. It's really good to post some comments on the information here. So if there's not a lot of talk on the forum, per se, about just various things, you can just post because of what you hear on the show and just your responses. Or say, hey, Slip, here's a story I want you to read on the show and check it out. So that's, you know, definitely we'll do that as well. All right.
Wait, well, you know, are we about to end here?
Almost. We got some SCO stuff, and then we're going to be done.
Okay. Because I heard a great story. The other day, if we want to end with it, I'll just do a little.
I'll do this, and then we'll end with that.
All right, sounds good. Okay. Because it's kind of long, so.
Well, we've got about 6 minutes.
Oh, well, it won't take 6 minutes. It'll take much more than that.
Okay. It's like trying to. Hey, the Lord of the Rings Twin Towers extended version is really good. 43 extra minutes. Lots of stuff in there.
Oh, my.
Lots of good stuff in there. Lots of stuff that looked like there were continued scenes in the Return of the King, you know, but they didn't have it.
Ooh, so it actually. It would be a better tie-in.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, if you see Pippin and who's the other guy? The other
Mary.
Mary. They're both smoke. Did you see the movie yet?
Yeah.
You saw the movie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. So they're both kicking back and, like, eating and drinking and smoking.
Yeah. Well, the extended version shows how they found all that stuff.
Yeah. And anybody who's read the books knows how they found it.
I was wondering, like, wait, they just killed all the, you know,
they're just hanging out there.
Yeah, like, where did all this food and drink come from?
Boromir and Faramir's father is in the second one. You see a backstory on that. You see Boromir and Faramir talking and communicating. You can see the problem. Huh. Boromir standing up for Faramir because his father treats him like crap.
There's all kinds of stuff in there. I'm like going, whoa, there should be more here.
The attack on Helm's Deep ended by, of course, they brought the other Rohanians that won off, 2,000-3,000 of them. They brought them in, but then after their fight, a lot of the Orukai ran off. They didn't show this part in the movie.
Oh.
They ran off. They ran off, and there's two things. When the trees went to go fight, Saruman, the wizard, okay. Saruman, he sent another group of trees off to the orcs at Helm's Deep.
Oh, wow.
So, when the orcs ran into the trees away from Helm's Deep, you saw all the trees moving, and they killed off the rest of the orcs.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah, there's just a lot of stuff. All right. Well,
because they spent months filming just the scene, you know, just the scenes at Helm's Deep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was, you know, I saw some of the, you know.
I can't wait to see the Return of the Kings extended.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Because the ending will be now 40 minutes instead of 23 minutes.
they did an entire, I think it was a day or two before the Return of the King came out, they did the entire, all three movies, sit down in the theater, watch all three movies. It was 15 hours long, and they were all the extended versions of each movie.
What?
Yeah.
I knew they did all three. I didn't know it was the extended version.
Yeah, they were all three extended versions.
Oh. 15 hours?
Yep.
Man, that pisses me off. I wish I was there.
Well, you know what?
We're going to have to do that.
My butt would actually thank me for not going.
Actually, those
tickets were about $50, though.
They probably spent like another $100 in crappy popcorn.
Well, yeah, and sodas and all that.
Okay, let's do this. Basically, SCO announced new initiatives to enforce intellectual property rights. Maybe they come up with some more crap, okay? Unix source code licensees required to provide written certification of compliance. SCO shows additional code detailing copyright violations in Linux through DMCA notification letters. Well, the code in question that they're talking about is the ERNO.h file, and it was bringing it up for all the different platforms of Linux, basically different types of processors, the signal.h file. And then, well, it was kind of funny because Linus had a response to that because, well, Linus wrote the file. Linus has taken a quick look at the files and had given permission for us to publish his first analysis. There will be more to say later, but the bottom line is that SCO appears to have made a copyright claim to some files that Linus wrote himself. I'll let him tell you about it by reproducing this initial email sent to me earlier today, which is September 22nd. I have a very strong memory of having written the original ERNO.h myself, too, and I really think that at least the i386 version of ERNO.h actually has different numbers from real Unix. Some of the first ones match, basically, the way the file works, but the rest do not. The one I explained by just having a list of error codes and just giving numbers in order, but maybe I am wrong. I have this distinct memory of figuring out only later that I should have made the numbers be the same so that I could have been binary compatible. After all, I do actually have the book Intel 386 Family Binary Compatibility Specification 2, copyright Intel Corporation, by the way, not SCO, and it lists the error numbers right there. They are different from what Linux uses on x86. Other architectures fix that mistake, but the point is that the history of ERNO.h is definitely not from Unix sources. So, just kind of, you know, dismaying the crap.
So they finally came out with something, and then the person who wrote it went, no, you're wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically.
We, in the last show, though, we talked about the SCO employee admitting that he contributed to SMP and a few other things that SCO is complaining about under his boss's permission.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like they've presented any SMP code, though, saying, hey, this is our stuff.
Yeah. So, well, maybe we'll save that for the next show.
All right.
Because we're going to wrap things up. Maybe see a movie after that. All right. Well, that was a good show. I felt a lot better, actually, having my Corona.
Yeah, actually, I'm really looking forward to, you know, seeing if we can make that a staple of this show.
Yeah. It was one Corona, folks. We're not getting drunk here.
No.
But what's wrong with getting drunk, you know? But
as long as you're not...
We want to be coherent while we're telling this information, you know? We don't want to...
Yeah. Again, the news, Linux news.
Bob, are you 21?
No, I'm not.
Oh, man. So we did not give any alcohol to Bob.
No. Wow.
Not drinking.
But we did give him crystal meth. No, because there is no age limit. It's just illegal.
Yeah.
No, just kidding. Okay, well...
See, that's the problem with, you know, illegal drugs, is because... If you're just going to be, you know, if you're going to break one law, you might as well break them all.
Yeah. actually, tonight, Bob was drinking balls.
And not ours.
Bob, would you like to tell us about balls with guarana?
Yeah, it's a very highly caffeinated energy drink. Very hard to find, but
you
it's
can
very,
see as
very
Bob
good.
Was bouncing off the walls during the show, talking over us many times. And
oh, yeah.
No, I'm stuck. So I was drinking balls. Is there, let's see. Nutritional facts. No.
Read off the ingredients.
Well, the nubs on that bottle actually look make it...
Looks like a cock ring, actually.
Yeah. Well, it makes it look like a butt plug,
and
really.
You know what? And the bottle is blue, so it's blue balls.
Oh, yeah. That's what
blue
it said
balls, and it has dimples on it. And I'm going to read off the ingredients here. Ingredients are carbonated water, corn syrup, citric acid, natural guarana flavor. By the way, anybody who doesn't know, that's caffeine. Sodium benzoate.
Well, isn't
caffeine,
natural
artificial flavors, and caramel color.
No, I think it's a fruit that actually has some caffeine in it.
Guarana is a berry, and it has a natural form of caffeine that is 2 times more potent than the caffeine they use in coffee.
And that's how I got my first job, was knowing that information.
That,
no,
is, that is a quote from the Ball's website, by the way.
Sweet.
See, he had to actually go to the Ball's website.
I didn't actually know that. Everybody has to learn something from somewhere. So.
What about the porn series Deep Balls? Did they get to sue them for having that name? Okay.
Well, that is a very similar thing, isn't it? And now if they actually had, like, blue on their bottle, then that might be reminiscence.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, this is another In the Now show, soon to be streamed out to other fellow listeners.
Yes, because we are not just active participants, we are actually listeners as well.
Yeah. Well, this is Slip Mode signing out. And
VR.
And Bob.
And we will see everyone in 2 more weeks. See you then.